It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. And now, the last speaker in our special series, Mind, Body, Spirit. Someone who takes these concepts to their limits.
I would pay anything to have a meaningful conversation with my father again.
If you could talk to your father's spirit, what would you ask him?
I don't know. I would say, hey, nice to see you again. And maybe let's just go for a walk and chat about things, what are happening in our lives with your grandchildren and with me. And just having a conversation with him would be amazing.
This is Artur Sitchoff, the founder of Somnium Space, a platform where Artur hopes that one day people can live forever, at least virtually.
Yeah. What if my grandkids can meet me in virtual reality or meet my alter ego or my AI avatar with my voice, with my movements, with my biometrics, and probably with my personality because AI is progressing so fast, and talk to me long after I'm gone?
Somnium Space is a virtual world, a metaverse, where every day people log in, put on a headset or even a full-body haptic suit with sensors, and live.
Right. So it's a virtual reality platform where people hop in from all over the world and they build, communicate, socialize, earn, have fun, and do whatever they want.
There are parties, movie nights, festivals, fashion shows.
Yeah. We have daily meetups, we have some, disco nights or even yoga classes.
And even though it's all online, these experiences can feel very lifelike.
Yeah. Your brain is tricked. Your eyes believe, and brain believes what you see. I'm wearing VR headset and I'm physically at home, but my mind is in this space. That's the beauty and the magic of virtual reality, because the moment you take your headset on, the snow, the sunset, all those buildings, all the city which is built by users, all of that, I can feel the distance, I can feel the height of this building. So yeah, that's the magic of VR. When you're here, you totally believe that you are actually inside this world.
Artur has been working with engineers for years to build Somnium Space. And their latest feature is called Live Forever Mode. Users can pay to create a digital doppelganger of themselves or loved ones, an avatar that will live on even when they die. But doing so requires collecting data, a lot of data.
So when you're in virtual reality, you are not only present there with voice, for example, but you use your whole body, right? And this body is tracked in the virtual space.
Meaning collecting information on how you move and much, much more.
You could actually record your ECG and other biometrics, like heart rate and stress levels. So when you take this data and you apply AI on top of those data, and you will be able to recreate the lifelike avatar of yourself when you're not there.
Are you collecting that much data right now about, like, every time you go into Somnium Space, are you collecting all the, like, the way you walk, the way you move, the way you talk, the way, all of that right now to create another version of you?
Right now, we're doing a lot of tests because collecting the data, it sounds easy, but it's not that trivial. Mm. It's a huge amount of data, and we're doing the tests to see what is the best way to not only record the data, but also encrypt the data so it's safe. So we are in a, let's say, early testing and late planning phase of this feature. And step one would be enabling people to record themselves. And step two would be enabling AI to actually being applied on those data and actually recreating the avatar.
Whew. So in your mind, do you ever picture you as a virtual avatar long after your physical flesh body has passed away?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes. And even before I'm gone, actually, I think this could be a very useful feature. Imagine I'm running an avatar shop in Somnium, and I'm busy in my real life. I can just let my avatar tell everything about these products, what I'm selling in virtual reality, to my guests. Or I, for example, collect digital art. I can let people talk to me or my second me about this gallery I have there. So of course, I picture that. And you know, if we talk about mortality, even, you know, right now we're making pictures of ourselves and our relatives. Now, you know, in the past 20 years, we started to make a lot of videos. Isn't it the same? Because videos are kind of like, it's a window to who those people were.
How are you?
For those people who are watching those videos later.
I think I should be driving.
I think so too.
And mom, how about you?
Let's see it again.
Oh, when the moon hits your eyes like a big piece of pie.
But actually meeting those people and being able to make a conversation with that person, it's a next level and it's a natural progression of the technology.
So there's a couple things that, I don't know, make me a little nervous. I'm curious what other people have told you. Part of me thinks, like, I don't know, would I want a virtual version of me? Walking around a virtual space, that's, there's something sort of out of, I can't even put words to it. How do we describe why we feel that there's this unease between the real world and creating a virtual version of a person?
Yeah, there's a lot of debate happening inside, you know, the company and community. I think, you know, will it be one-to-one personality as it was before? I don't think so. But will it be close enough for people to recognize the person and to feel the presence? 100%. But right now, we are most of the time concentrated on this experimental thing where how can we allow people to record themselves as early as possible? Because that's what matters. If they have data about themselves, then if something happens, at least we have something, which we can then, maybe together with their family or with relatives, to decide what do we do with that. At least they have an option, because not having an option is the worst case scenario. And I don't want people to not have an option.
Part of me feels hesitant in that you've described collecting vast amounts of some of the most intimate personal data a person can generate. I mean, Arthur, I hesitate giving a company my phone number. The thought of giving...
Rightfully so, absolutely.
You know, the thought of handing over my stress levels for 2 years or my gait for 2 years or all of that information, I probably can't even think of how much information it is. That sounds worrying.
It is. And people should definitely think a million times before they do that. Part of why we believe people will do that with Somnium is because you would have to pay for this feature, which will in return allow us to, you know, run secure encryption on top of your data, make sure that everything is secure. Now, can we at this moment guarantee 100% that all of this will never be hackable? I don't know, but we are transparent and we want to earn the trust of people by proofs.
When I try to imagine this technology being part of, like, our regular lives, I cannot help but think of all the sci-fi movies and TV shows that illustrate this idea or versions of this idea of preserving a human digitally, like the movie Marjorie Prime.
Does it bother you that your mother is talking to a computer program or that a computer program is pretending to be your dad?
It bothers me that you are helping it pretend to be some fountain of youth version of my dad.
It's how she remembers him, and she accepts.
Or, of course, Black Mirror.
She's scheduled to pass tomorrow afternoon.
Scheduled to pass. Let's just call it dying.
If you can call it dying.
Upload it to the cloud. Sounds like heaven.
And a lot of these plots illustrate the darker side of this quest to live forever virtually. But Arthur, like, what is your vision for how people will use this feature? Like, would I don't know, decide to give it as a gift to my children and my grandchildren so that when I'm gone, I can leave them a virtual version of me that they can hang out with in your metaverse? Is that what you picture?
To be honest, I think I'd picture something more of a, hey, we had grandmother, right? And let's take a tour in VR all together as a family and visit her and just talk to her about what did she do in her life, who she was, what were her interests. And I think even just having a question-answer conversation about that person and being even able to come and touch the arm or the heart and feel the heart rate, the actual heart rate of that person, it's magical. And we know it's possible today with the technology available today.
Here's the thing. It's like I can imagine you capturing someone's mannerisms or their way of speaking and the way that they move their body and all of those things. But each of us contains sort of this, you know, it's an ineffable sort of sparkle or spirit. It's what some people might refer to as the soul. Can you really replicate that, Arthur? Can you really save that digitally?
That is an incredible question, which I don't have a direct answer to. You know, maybe it will be a bit different soul, which AI will be able to recreate. You know, we're now getting into the territory of AI being sentient. But if something, you know, to a person who speaks to that AI avatar, it will feel as if that AI had a soul. You know, those robot pets, like Sony did a robot in the past with a robot dog and people playing with them. People created real relationship with those dogs. They were their friends. And it's just a rudimentary robot. But imagine that with a personality times 1,000. That's where it can get really interestingly tricky to then realize whether something is real or not. Does it have soul or not? We don't know. But this will be multiplied by 1,000 because of VR and body movements and voice and all of those things combined will create some magical moments.
There are going to be some people listening to this who are saying, oh, yeah, definitely. I want to preserve the people in my life. I want to meet my ancestors. I want my children's children's children to meet me. And there are going to be other people listening, Arthur, who think you sound absolutely crazy. What do you say to them? Is this what innovation looks like?
It's exactly what innovation looks like. And I think it's exactly how it should be. And I want people to say, oh my God, Arthur is crazy. What is he thinking about? Is he insane? And then there will be other people saying, oh my God, you know, take my money. Where can I sign up? Mm. And I think that's exactly how it should be.
I read somewhere that you were inspired to build this feature in part because of your father, losing your father.
Yeah. It's kind of personal. Some years ago, my father was diagnosed with cancer. He was a great guy and very energetic. And of course, you know, as every son and father, there were some tough moments. But overall, he was very easy to talk to and a lovely person. And it did occur to me that what if I had more recordings of my father in VR? What if I had more audio recordings of him, of his movements and heartbeat? I could have recreated him later.
Is it a way of reconnecting with someone you love? Or is this also about trying to find immortality in some way?
You know, I understand people who freeze their bodies in hope that they will be revived at some point in the future. Because when you die, if you don't do that, you have 0% chance to survive. Zero. You're dead. You're gone. If you do this, you have maybe 0.00001% chance of living again.
But not really. Come on, Artur. That's not really living, is it?
Yeah, but you don't know, because the medicine in 200 years could be able to revive you and give you a new body. You don't know. That's the beauty of it. You don't know. But if you don't do it, you know that you're gone. If you do it, you have a chance. And I think chance is what half of the humanity lives for every day. Why don't give us a chance to live forever?
That's Artur Sichov. He's the founder and CEO of Somnium Space. You can see his talk at ted.npr.org. We debated whether it was wise to end this episode and our entire series on such a futuristic note. But whether we look to ancient practices for inspiration or to technological innovation for what might be, people will keep trying to enhance the mind, body, and spirit, however you define it. Science and social norms will continue growing our understanding of their mechanics, parsing how one affects the other two. And of course, we will keep searching for balance between all three. It is the human condition. And so we hope this series has brought back to life a phrase that has become a trite hashtag or an esoteric concept, depending on your perspective. Thank you so much for listening. If you didn't hear parts one and two, just go back in your feed. They're worth it. This episode was produced by Katie Monteleone and Rachel Faulkner-White. It was edited by Sanaz Meshkinpour and me. Our production staff at NPR also includes James Delahousie, Matthew Cloutier, Fiona Guerin, Andrea Gutierrez, Harsha Nahada, and Julia Carney. Beth Donovan is our executive producer. Our intern is Susanna Brown. We also want to give a special shout-out this week to the many people who helped us bring this series to life. Mathilde Piard, Gary DeWong, Malvika Dang, and artist Bug Robbins. This episode featured home video clips from Sina and Mina, Meshkinpour, Agdam, and family. Eleanor Brown and her dad, Mike, Adelina Lancianese and her grandfather, Pasco, and Andrea Gutierrez and her family. Our theme music was written by Ramtin Arablouei. Our audio engineers were Robert Rodriguez and Gilly Moon. Our partners at TED are Chris Anderson, Colin Helms, Anna Phelan, Michelle Quint, Jimmy Gutierrez, Alejandra Salazar, and Daniela Balarezo. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you've been listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.